I heartily endorse this event or product.
Ahoy, hoy, everybody. Welcome to Talk to the Audience, where this is always death. I am one of your hosts, Bob Mackey, who is here with me as always.
Ted Cruz hater, Henry Yeller.
Oh, I didn't think of a joke. But okay, so this is our monthly community podcast. We've been getting a lot of new signups lately to the Patreon, so welcome.
Hello.
If you're new, you have a lot of podcasts to download, I gotta tell you, buddy. But yeah, welcome. This is our community podcast, in case you've never heard it before. We basically go over things that have been happening to us, Simpsons news that's been happening, and also, what else do we do? Oh yeah, we answer your questions and comments. Even a month yeah. has gone by, I've forgotten everything.
I know, it feels relatively recent. We recorded the January one,
and yeah,
we were just high on having just recorded our two live shows, and now that's a month ago.
I can't believe it. Yeah, so much has happened, and we have so much to talk about. So again, welcome to all the new patrons. I expect we're going to see a lot more next month when Talking Futurama starts, so let's talk about that.
Yeah,
we recorded three episodes of Talking Futurama so far
already.
Yes,
we are three episodes deep into it. We just recorded a couple yesterday.
That was 2 days ago.
Well,
whatever. This is going up today, so it was actually three. Oh no, it's going up the same day it's recorded. You know, I don't want to break the magic for you people, but it's been going great. It follows the same approach as Talking Simpsons, with clips and guests and explaining references and telling you what happened on the day it aired. So
the best research we can to explain a binary joke, which is just like, look, I don't know. Yes. I don't know binary code, guys. I'm sorry. I'm a comedy nerd, not a math nerd.
I think the future Talk to the Audience episodes are going to be us reading people explaining the math jokes in Talking Futurama that we don't get.
Like, I actually have an explained math joke in one of the comments.
Fermat's Last Theorem?
Yes.
I thought so.
One. Yeah, but
we're idiots.
But the recording went great, though. The recordings have gone great so far. It has been fun to re-explore original Futurama in the first episodes of it, and
yeah,
especially hearing all the commentaries again.
I've been having so much fun, and I think I said this on an earlier Talk to the Audience. Maybe I didn't, but I thought I was bored of Futurama. I thought I had burned myself out on it. I didn't really follow it in the Comedy Central years, but watching it again, I'm like, oh no, I really love these first four seasons a lot, and maybe I'll like the later ones if I give them another shot.
Maybe. I think what maybe hurts the later seasons for me is that if we're going to be following it in chronological order, which we're only doing the first season.
Right.
But were we to keep going with it, once you get to, you know, Bender's Big Score, Wild Green Yonder, those movies are like another season, but also four kind of movies, but kind of not.
Yeah, they float between being a bunch of TV shows stitched together in a movie, and I wish it was just a movie. Like,
yeah,
just make a movie.
Or another new season.
Yeah.
Like, I honestly think we got fucked by Stewie Griffin's whatever.
The Untold Story?
Yeah, The Untold Story, Stewie Griffin. That bullshit.
It made a model, like a model that worked for, I don't know, 2 or 3 years for people.
Well, I mean, if you could put, I could see in an executive's mind right now who said, like, we sold all these DVDs that had 20 episodes on it. What if we sold another DVD that just had 3 episodes on it? We'd make even more money.
It's called the anime approach.
Exactly.
And it worked about 10 years before that. So, it worked for a brief period of time.
Yeah. And I think it worked for Futurama as well. They sold pretty well.
Yeah.
And still got to like syndicate them like regular episodes.
And on that momentum, they relaunched the series. So, yeah, we'll see. I mean, it'll be years before we get to, if we go back to Futurama, and we might, you never know. It'll be a long time before we hit the shakier year. So don't worry. Don't worry about it now.
I'm having a good time with the first season, though.
But yes.
You know what else I'm having a good time with?
What is that, Henry?
Well, our other podcast, Futurama, just to explain to new listeners who might not know that, the Futurama, we started that as our replacement for Talking Critic, being a limited series that we do exclusively for Patreon for people to listen to there. But we hit our $8,000 goal to start another podcast, and that is not Futurama. That is a general cartoon podcast where we will do a different cartoon every episode in the imitable Talking Simpsons style.
Yes, I want to explain. It's not doing another season, because I've been posting hints about what we're doing, and people are assuming that it's like, oh, another season of this. It's like, nope. It is every episode will be a different cartoon from a different series, and we can always go back and do more than one. But honestly, it probably won't be a while before we do that, because we just have so much to choose from at the beginning here.
We have all of animation history to choose from. I think we're going to stick mostly to TV shows at first, but I mean, there are shorts and films that we could go into as well. And It's just because I love so many cartoons more than just The Simpsons. I mean, if any listeners heard us get off on a rant about like Bugs Bunny or something.
Oh, yeah. Several hours of Laser Time conversations are talking about Bugs Bunny. Mm-hmm.
Or anime or dozens of different shows. Like, I don't want to have to commit to doing every episode of Batman the Animated Series just to talk about it on a podcast. And I think, too, the generalness of it will allow us to like pick and choose ones based on guests or what would fit with like an anniversary or something mm-hmm. like that. It just gives us so much more flexibility than the albatross that is every episode of The Simpsons, which I love and I am very happy to do.
Me too. By the way, I didn't want to make it sound like I was lecturing people for misunderstanding the premise of the show. I'm just happy you're excited. Like,
yes.
And if anything, pure excitement is what was making you misunderstand the concept. So that's good. I'm glad. I'm really glad you're excited.
Yes, but I mean, do you want to say the name of it, Bob, that we decided on?
I'll let you, because Henry, he came up with a whole list of names, and there were so many. It's like, well, you've got this covered, but I kind of picked out what I like the best out of your awesome list of names. You can say it.
What a Cartoon.
Excellent.
That is the official name of it. What a Cartoon, because we had thought about things with the word animation in it, but it's like, that's too clinical.
And there are like 80 podcasts on iTunes, 79 of which are now defunct, that have the name animation somewhere in them.
Unbelievably, we're not the first people to do an animation podcast, but we will do it the best. I promise you.
And we will never die.
We will never die. We'll never stop. Never. But yeah, we were... I love that we picked What a Cartoon. We even have got a cool song for it.
Yes, and you'll hear it at the end of this episode. So we'll go out with our new theme from Hot Dad, which you've heard. He has done the 30-20-10 theme. He's done tons of great stuff for YouTube.
He's amazing. Yeah, I love Hot Dad so much. And he's a friend of the show. He's a cool guy. And so we hired him to do the song, and it's perfect. It's exactly what I wanted from a Hot Dad song.
I already have it stuck in my head, so that's a good sign.
And I think that'll really ease people into the show. It's also, you know, on Simpsons, it's easy to just, well, not easy, but you can take a song from like a video game, which is what we did for Simpsons, of like, yeah, this is the arcade theme. It gets you into it. It's not just repeating to any Elfman's theme song, but it gets you into it. And I think same with like Futurama, we're just going to do a takeoff of the theme song too. But for What a Cartoon is so flexible and malleable, you need a song that can kind of cover everything, but in a fun way.
And that is an impossible task to achieve that we gave him, and he did it.
Yes, yeah.
It's like, just make a song that'll cover everything that's animated. You know how to do that, right?
We're just going to do animated things, so if you could just do that. But
we're writers. We don't understand writing music. I don't get it.
You sit in front of a keyboard and it happens. Monsters. Yeah. That's what writing music is.
It'll sound much better coming out of Hot Dad.
But I look forward to it also because we're going to do anime even. I know there's some people who are like, anime? What? Or why don't you do anime? Bob and I are anime fans.
Yes, we are.
But critical ones, though. we don't just take whatever anime we get.
That's true. And we already recorded one anime-based episode of What a Cartoon, and it was really fun. We spent an hour talking about a 22-minute anime episode without any clips either.
Yeah.
This show will have clips, but for anime, unless it's a greater iconic dub, I think we're not going to have as many clips because it's like, here's that line that 1% of our listeners will understand.
Yeah. But also, I apologies for being promotional here, but we have a couple of $50 slots open on the Patreon, and if you give at that level, if you support us at that level, you can make us do an episode of What a Cartoon of your choice.
That's right.
Within reason, no porn, said that.
And I think it's what, every 4 months you unlock a new episode to request. So I think we're actually coming up on the second round, because the first round ended in October, and we've already covered a few of those.
Yep.
And the next one, I think, will be like November, maybe March. I don't know. We'll figure out the math.
And we've recorded already a couple of those ones for that too. What a Cartoon. But we're going to mix them up. So we're going to start with a real strong episode. I don't want to spoil what episode is going to be the first one, but I think it's a very strong choice.
I have some ideas I want to tell you over lunch.
Ooh,
so
boy.
We'll get to that. Man, it's going to be a big, huge first month for What a Cartoon. We can't wait. It's going to be happening we don't have an official day, but it's March.
It'll
be March. Yeah. Probably early March.
Yeah. That's also in March. Not smart. March is when Futurama will be launching exclusively on this Patreon.
Yes,
the first
episode will be free, but it will also be posted to the Patreon as well for your convenience.
Yeah, we don't want any of you guys to miss anything. And I also, I won't get into specifics, but there are new guests coming too.
Oh boy.
We've got a lot of big guests on the docket. We're hoping, I've said it before on here, like before we did Mimi Pond and Mike Scully, I think a week beforehand we recorded a podcast saying like, oh, we've got somebody big, but can't say, because I never want to say until they're actually recorded. But we have people on deck that are akin to Mike Scully and Mimi Pond levels of excitement, at least from us.
Oh, yeah. Like some of the biggest heavy hitters on The Simpsons in terms of both writing and animation. Mm-hmm. So I am so excited to talk to these people.
Yeah, I really am, too. And I think if you're, again, a new listener, you might miss the interviews just because we've just made so much content. Yes. They've been kind of pushed down, and you might not have seen, say, our one with Reed Harrison, the writer of the Springfield Files, who also worked on the third unmade season of The Critic. Like, he tells us a ton of interesting shit about working on The Simpsons and animation in general.
We're big shots now. We had a lunch with Patreon, and we told them we want our number one request, at least mine was, I want it to be much easier to find like content, like an archive of content. And I gave them that request. Hopefully they'll follow through.
Yeah, it was actually really... Let's talk about that. It was really cool going to the Patreon offices and seeing what it was. It was nice to... I mean, that we got an invite from... Well, I don't know her title, but a woman who is like liaison, we're for creators with the company, and just kind of hearing us and getting to know us as creators. And so it was really cool to chat about stuff.
And they weren't trying to sell us anything or talk us into anything. It was just a friendly talk about what we're doing. And we had some suggestions for them and feedback for them. It was great.
I will admit, I was slightly afraid of... Ooh, are they going to like, is this going to end with, so we're starting a new program and it's called this and we really would like you to buy into it or something like that. But no, that did not come up. But I think...
No sleaze was involved.
Yeah, I think I really appreciate Patreon as a platform. Not that they don't fuck up sometimes, for sure, but...
They corrected.
They did correct, and it has been the best, like... way I've gotten money in my entire life of working. I would say that.
Same
for
here.
Sure. Yeah.
And I don't see it going anywhere.
No, it's as steady as a rock. they were super nice. They talked to us, and I wonder too if they could do like a Patreon con or something. They should have, honestly, if I were them, I would have a Patreon supported podcast festival.
That'd be amazing.
And just have all the Patreon podcasts they could in one place.
We really need to start going to LA Podfest and things like that, because we do perform live in San Francisco, but I'd love to go elsewhere. But speaking of which,
oh, good boy,
we have another live show coming up in San Francisco.
Yes.
At Piano Fight.
Yeah, at Piano Fight again, which is the venue we did the January 28th podcast from. It was. It's also on the stage that's in the bar area, which we recorded the second live show there, and it went really good. And the people who run the venue are super cool people who I think are very like artist friendly. I think too, because I believe they came from an improv background of their own, and so they're comedy fans, and they want more people to perform there.
Yeah, it's a super independent theater, and it's just great to, like I said probably on the last episode, we just had done our last two. We recorded the last talk to the audience, and I was just like, it's a great tool for promotion, but it's also like, I love to meet people, and I love to perform, and I love to just see actual like humans, like, oh my God, humans like this. So it's not just a number you can see of downloads.
I know. It's just seeing them in person and thanking them and getting to meet so many cool people who came. But if you were like, oh, I'm too busy, I can't make it. Well, maybe you can make it to our St. Patrick's Day show.
Ooh.
That's when it is, Saturday, March 17th in the afternoon. You can see all the details on Piano Fight's website. Just look up Piano Fight. I mean, just Google Piano Fight San Francisco. You'll find it.
Can we post a link to the ticket page on Patreon?
You know,
that
I'll
way,
put that in the post for this too. Yeah,
because it is a we pack the room, people. We're big shots, but our last show was standing room only, and I want our patrons to be able to get a seat and get first dibs on the tickets, so let's do that. I'll do that today.
All right. Then totally look forward to that. It's already on the page when you're hearing this. I'm really looking forward to working on that more, and I would. You know, we got several messages from people about like, oh, come to City X and record here. Multiple for Portland. That was a big one. Just like, do a live show here, do a live show there. And like, we're not... I want to get more comfortable doing live shows first before we like go on the road too much, but maybe. I do want to.
This is not a promise. Sorry to interrupt you. This is not a promise, but maybe for the next Portland Retro Gaming Expo, we can also do, along with Retronauts, a Talking Simpsons panel.
Ooh, I'd be up for that for sure. I love Portland.
It's still a ways off, but that's one of my favorite times of the year, so maybe that'll happen.
Well, and also there were several comments wondering if we had ridden the Simpsons ride, and I have. Bob has not.
I have not.
That also is something I think of, like, if we went down to L.A. for, like, some pod festival, we would also, should, set aside a day, me and Bob go to Universal Hollywood and enjoy the Simpsons and Springfield.
We could do an entire podcast about the experience.
Oh, for sure, yeah.
And it's not, frankly, it's not that far. We should be going now.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, let's buy the tickets now.
Yes.
I wanted to
kill two birds with one stone, though. Like, go to PodFest, get some cool people on the show, and then go to Universal Studios.
Or at the very least, if we can't get on, like, a PodFest equivalent thing, at the very least, pick a weekend. We go down to, or even a week, we go to L.A., get a hotel room, record with cool folks in La La Land, and then spend a day at Universal. Also, just to see the new Fast and the Furious ride, which I hear is really cool.
Is it like a repurposed Back to the Future? Oh, wait, no, that's the Simpsons ride.
That is the Simpsons ride.
What did they repurpose? The Terminator ride or what?
I think it actually might be the Terminator ride or the... I think it might be the old tour they had. The like tour the studio thing, because it's like driving around for real.
Okay, so not is it the one that Fred Savage ran through in The Wizard?
Oh yeah, like, yeah, that's the one. Yeah,
dodging through King Kong and stuff. Yeah.
Or also remember in, I believe it was Beverly Hills Cop Part 3, he was on the Earthquake ride or the Battlestar Galactica ride being shot at with fake lasers.
Wait, Battlestar Galactica? Galactica had a ride?
Sort of, at Universal Hollywood, based on 80s Battlestar.
A show that
Galactica was
canceled pretty quickly.
I was having this conversation with my husband about how I wondered if he'd ever been to Universal Orlando, and he said he did in like the mid-90s. Or late 90s, I told him, well, everything's gone. So it's basically a new trip there. Like I rode Back to the Future. I'm like, well, that's Simpsons now. He's like, well, I rode the Shrek thing. Or no, the thing that became Shrek. I was like, yeah, it's not that. He's like, I rode King Kong. He's like, nope, not that anymore either.
Was the Shrek ride like the Pagemaster ride or something?
Or it was the Ghostbusters Theater.
I was kidding. There's no way they'd ever make a Pagemaster ride.
I am shocked that they still keep having the Mummy one there, because it is like two mummies ago for Universal.
And doesn't Beetlejuice still hang out in Universal Studios?
You'll see him around. Same with the Blues Brothers.
Does any kid know who Beetlejuice is?
I mean, I had the same thought seeing the Scoob and the gang around. I was like, hey, it's the Scooby-Doo gang. Why are we... do kids know who you are?
They still get new cartoons, though.
That is true. Yeah. They're more known than the Jetsons.
But, I mean, Beetlejuice is now just a classic movie monster. Yeah, he's from 30 years ago.
Well, or the Bill and Ted show they used to do as well.
Oh, wow.
But yeah, I will say I did become that dork. I don't get excited seeing, like, Mickey in costume or whatever at Disney. Like, I'm not judging people who do. I'm just saying I'm better than you.
I'm afraid of mascots. I don't want them to touch me.
Have you seen the ones that actually talk? Like,
No.
They are creepy.
Is it from the show Dinosaurs?
Their heads move. They are, sorry. What I was going to say was, I don't get excited when I'm at Disney and see a Disney character in costume there, but when I last went to Universal Orlando and saw like Homer and Bart standing around, I was like, well, I have to pose with these people.
I would make an exception there.
I have to do this. Or, well, yeah, take my picture next to the Milhouse standee in front of the Quickie Mart. I got to do it. But I want to go to the Hollywood one more than Orlando, not just because I've been to Orlando before and it's a horrific. It's like an 8-hour flight across country.
Ooh,
I don't want to do that. But also, LA's Springfield is bigger. It is a bigger Springfield because they have to hide more stuff. The reason they built up Springfield more was to obscure the parts of the bigger Harry Potter rides.
Was that a new part of the park or something they changed?
Oh, Harry Potter?
I mean, no, yeah. Simpsons. It's just an expansion.
They have the Simpsons ride, which was originally just a faux Krusty Land and a very tiny, like, it's the entrance to Krusty Land, and you can play some crappy carnival games and earn itchy and scratchy toys or whatever. And then there's also a baby ride, which is like, I guess basically the Dumbo ride, except you're on spaceships being held up by Kang and or Kodos, which is cute in its own way, but it's not particularly like, it's just a carnival.
It's not that exciting.
No. But then after people, I think they realized it wasn't that cool, Krusty Land, they then built out Springfield from that section. Like, okay, fine. Here's Springfield. Here's a Quickie Mart. Here's the fake entrance to Duff Gardens. Here's a Krusty Burger. Here's the Chicken Fingers place from Cletus Buckler and the Frying Dutchman. So when they built it out, it was a lot cooler. Mm. And now I know the Hollywood one, they have that stuff. And they also built it out even farther to have like Aztec Theater, the Springfield Penitentiary with Sideshow Bob escaping, the skyline of the cooling towers from the nuclear plant. It's
and
really cool.
Lots of slack-jawed yokels who don't work for the park. They're just there attending.
Just there.
Look at that pointy-haired statue of a little girl. So on our notes, you have make fun of Ted Cruz. This is recent news. And so number one, it was fun to make fun of Ted Cruz, as it always is. But number two, I was like, at the end of the day, we just gave Ted Cruz a lot of publicity, and I'm not happy about that. But what did he say, Henry?
Ted Cruz said, "The Democrats are the party of Lisa Simpson, and Republicans are happily the party of Homer and Bart and Maggie and Marge." Which, first off, that is that like big tent, like he is talking about the big tent vision of the old GOP. He has not gotten the memo that they're openly white supremacists now. It's just like, dude,
that is true.
It's just, come on, you're like three messages ago, buddy.
I also, like, everyone had a good joke about it. Mine was comparing him to the pumpkin-headed man from the People Who Look Like Things joke on The Simpsons.
He wants a new candle every now and then. He looks just like him. And mine was finding four great Homer moments of him acting like a Republican. And also saying that, yeah, Homer is a Republican because he is a stupid reactionary who learns nothing.
And this happened before where when he was running for president, there was a video with him doing impressions of characters.
Yes, yeah.
And it was one of the weird ways he was trying to humanize himself. Mm-hmm. He was saying, look, I love this show that I clearly don't understand, that clearly mocks me at every turn and people like me.
But I must have, I must be human if I enjoy it and can do like a Ned Flanders imitation. And it's something he does so often to pretend he's not reptilian, which he is the same with.
It was no Pokemon Go to the polls, but it was still pretty bad.
Look, I'm not saying that Hillary Clinton was more human than him. Maybe she slightly was. But it also, I saw people making fun of Ted Cruz in the same way of like, him mentioning The Simpsons is like how they think that he intentionally liked a porn video because that was him trying to pretend like, yes, I like to watch humans copulate like all of you. But he's just an asshole. But there's been lots of good quotes out of it, out of Republicans this week, because they're having their like CPAC convention, which is like their gross orgy of blood and money.
Our listeners know where we stand.
Yes, I should think
to the
so.
Left of everything.
To the left of most humans, I suppose. But yeah, the convention has had many great scenes of people saying Chicago in the most racist way they can.
Chicago now means no longer means a city anymore. It's
Chicago
now a racial slur.
It's the new N-word.
Yeah,
Chicago.
It is.
It's like
Chicago politics.
Yeah, maybe you should think about what Chicago is doing, Obama. Mm. Or actually, the hideous hell beast woman who is like the spokeswoman for NRA.
Dana Loesch.
Yeah, Dana Loesch. She was like, she had a quote today saying, "The media only wants to show crying white mothers. And I say that because they don't give a crap about all the black mothers crying in every day from murders in Chicago."
Oof.
Hold for applause.
She is straight out of the Killbot factory.
She is a monster.
She's the worst.
Yes.
In happier news, though, there's some recent news about upcoming guest stars. And I guess, I mean, this is not really a get for the show, but it's kind of cool. Ray Liotta is going to play Moe's dad.
I am shocked he has not appeared in a Fat Tony episode before this.
I mean, Ray Liotta, awesome in one of the best movies of all time, Goodfellas, but he also is at the I'm doing Uwe Boll movies part of his career. I don't know what he did.
He looks
very puffy now with plastic surgery.
He's got rent to pay at the very least. I don't want to say drugs, but I'm making the drinky motion here.
He was a very key plot point in B Movie.
That was so weird.
Like Ray Liotta's Honey or something like that.
Yeah.
I didn't watch it. I listened to We Hate Movies and they covered it.
I've seen the clips of it. It's just like, this is very out of left field. Why was this the passion project of Jerry Seinfeld? This makes no sense.
I don't know. He chose to come back for that in The Marriage Ref.
Yep, The Marriage Ref. Because In that one, he was so sick of having arguments with his wife that he couldn't win. So he's like, if there was a ref here, they'd take my side. And then somehow NBC gets to make a show about that. I remember when he was taking Leno's side in the Conan Leno thing. Ooh. And his stance was like, hey, man, Conan, your ratings just aren't there. You know, you live and die by your ratings. Everyone said, your show Marriage Ref got a second season on horrible ratings because you're Jerry Seinfeld.
Yes. NBC wanted to kiss the ring.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, the last bit of news that I'd seen Simpsons-wise, well, I guess it wasn't really news, but I've been seeing it retweeted. It's on David Silverman, the Simpsons master director who's been worked on the show from day one, pretty much. He is sharing these classic sketchbooks, I think he has unearthed, of showing, like, I was in a writer's retreat in 1995. We were talking about the episode Homer's Enemy. Here's my first sketches on what Grimey would look like in this scene and this scene.
There are even drawings of jokes and like notes about ideas. This really shows why he's listed as a producer a lot of the time, because he does write for the show.
Totally.
Just not like in words all the time.
All these shots of, like, from the Homer versus New York episode, like the shot of Barney hanging over a giant beer and just Homer's anger. He had a great drawing that basically was in the show of Homer's angry face at seeing the boot on his car and finally just giving up on New York City. It was really cool. I would say if you don't follow Tubatron,
he plays the tuba.
He does. He draws that in kind of every self-character of him. I think when he is the guy who rostifies Poochie by 10% in that scene, and I believe there is a tuba in the background of
and
that shot.
I think he's also in the Larry Davis Experience playing tuba in some of
those
shots.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
You can tell what times they were drawing David Silverman because his hairstyle changes. Sometimes he's long hair, sometimes he isn't. I also hear that David Silverman brings some of those sketches to Burning Man, that he is a Burning Man patron and brings it there.
I always see his crazy Burning Man pics. So
the Burning Man stories I have heard always make me go like, well, I don't know if I actually want to. This sounds interesting, but also I'm afraid as a baby.
Yeah, so Burning Man has changed a lot. It used to be about togetherness and, you know, love and of course drugs and sex. But now it's basically just like a tech retreat for tech people. Let's talk about ideas.
God damn it, man. These fucking tech bros, they ruin everything.
Some people I hate follow on social media. I'm like, they're at Burning Man? No wonder it sucks.
The story that I always imagine when I hear of Burning Man was, so I worked with this guy who at Games Radar, who seemed just like a very normal dude. They really was his freak. But but he then said oh yeah, I'm gone all next week for Burning Man. I was like, whoa. And then he came back and he didn't really tell any stories either. He wasn't a gossiper about it. But then not long after that, there comes in a PR person to demo a video game. And when they see each other, like, whoa, I remember you from Burning Man. And then one guy says that, yeah, we were in my van where I was DJing, that he brought his van there that also had all his DJ equipment, and that there were two naked women in there masturbating in his van as he played his DJ stuff. I was like, wow, that's quite a vision.
But that reminds me of years and years and years ago when I first started on Retronauts, I got my green card, my weed card in California. I'm so cool, guys. I use drugs. I smoke them like cigarettes. I was at the weed store and I bought weed and I was leaving. And as I was leaving the store and still feeling weird about having bought marijuana legally, it was my first time. I was just like, wow, this still feels like I still feel weird and guilty about this because I was denied this opportunity in Ohio. I'm literally walking out of the dispensary and somebody's like, Bob Mackey. And I was like, what the hell?
Whoa.
And this person, I started on Retronauts 3 weeks earlier and they're like, I love Retronauts. Oh, you're so good on it. And we had a conversation. And as I left, he's like, don't worry, I won't tell anybody.
Yeah.
And he never narked on me. But it's well, that's awesome. It was legal. So
yeah, that's, well, as long as you're telling weed stories, I have found out I am definitely not a smoke weed every day guy, because now that it is recreationally available in California, I bought my first weed as well, but edibles, because I just don't like smoking. It's just, no, I never like smoking it.
You should really try, again, this podcast is getting weird now, but definitely try vaping. I don't eat edibles because they just make me feel like I'm going to die.
Yeah, it was so I got a brownie and I was like, well, then just one bite, I'll be fine. And 30 minutes later, I was like, oh, my head is flying away from me. I need to lie in bed. And every time I closed my eyes while I was in bed, I was like, I guess I'm flying away. And everything is expanding beyond me. And I tried not to get too obsessed with, like, this is the worst feeling ever. I hate this. Never do drugs again. But then after it was over, the next morning, I was like, I just feel tired. I also felt crappy because, like, my husband had just come home. I was like, oh, well, I'll just get high and let's eat dinner and then watch cartoons. And then an hour later, I was like, don't say anything. I won't speak to you anymore because I can't talk. And I felt bad. I was like, nope, no hanging out tonight. I got high.
Smaller portions.
Yeah. I guess, too, as a white guy buying weed, I feel like a piece of shit sometimes.
There is that, too. That's also part of the guilt. Like, oh, people are in jail for what I'm doing credit card.
It feels like the dudes who walk around with open carry machine guns everywhere, they're just like, that is showing off, like, that they're always white, because if you are not white and walk around with a machine gun, you will be murdered. Like, you don't have open carry rights
on the spot.
You can't be a black person and hold a toy gun and not be killed by the cops a lot of the time.
So we talked about weed and politics. Now it's time to talk about your questions and comments. Mm-hmm. The most important part of Talk to the Audience.
Well, so first off, I don't have any direct quotes from people, but in our last Talk to the Audience, we asked people how they came to this Patreon, and several people said via guest appearances by Matt McMuscles of Super Best Friends podcast, who that's really cool and
it's awesome,
and others from listening to Laser Time, and others who wanted to sign up just to hear Who Shot Mr. Burns Part 2, and I think we've kept him around with our great content.
That's great. I want to say Henry has been the guest getter. He is so good at getting guests, but I'm working on getting some of the greatest greats of the world of podcasting, so look forward to that.
I liked having Matt McMuscles on. We haven't had enough, you know, fellow travelers of the podcasting world on Talking Simpsons, even though we know so many of them love The Simpsons. They just want to talk about them all day.
And we have one coming up in a few weeks?
No, it's actually next week's episode, King Size Homer. We have one such guest who I'll let you guys be surprised by it.
He
was really great. It was a man, so you have that. And, and also, so many, I didn't get any
cuts of those, but...
So many people were like, wow, Kat should be a regular on here. Everybody loves Kat. I tell that to Kat, too, that, like, every time we have Kat Bailey on, which she was just on Bart Sells Soul and Lisa Vegetarian, that everyone loves her and wants her on the podcast more. I think she really appreciates that, guys.
I think people are just astounded. It's like, wait a minute, this is not the voice of a white man on a podcast? Yes. Is my phone broken? Oh, my gosh.
A lesbian woman? What's the hell? Yeah, I know. It was a great tweet I read today, somebody saying the craziest thing on Big Bang Theory is that four nerdy guys could hang around with each other and not start a podcast. That's too unbelievable.
It's good. I like it.
On Home Sweet Home Diddly Dum Doodly, we have our first actual comments here from Dan Fix says, anyone who hangs toilet paper underhanded is a monster. People are going to say that it's because cats will unroll it overhand style, but to those people I say TS. Yeah, I guess he's saying Talking Simpsons.
Tethered swimming?
I am currently overhanded in my bathroom, but I really don't make a difference. Like, so I just put it on there. I guess I prefer overhand for like, I don't have to reach under the toilet paper to get to it. I reach over it.
I think I said on that episode I'm a toilet paper centrist. Yeah. My toilet paper holder is vertical. It's like a vertical bar, so you just set it on there, and it just sort of hangs like as it would.
I like that, though. I like the simplicity of having it in the wall, like having the wall fixture. It also like shows off, like, I live in a place where they built it into the wall.
They were thoughtful about toilet paper. Yeah, actually, the game Thimbleweed Park has an option where you can display the toilet paper in the game over the roll or under the roll.
Wow.
It's a very granular option. It's a joke, but it's still, it actually works in the game. So
awesome.
I chose under the roll. So Anita Rose says, I always call my dachshund Maggie stupid baby out of pure love, and I always say stupid babies need the most love to her. I'm so happy you guys caught the Trader Pete's Pier 1 line. That was all Henry. Yeah, awesome.
There were multiple people some people saying, I have the DVDs and they say Trader Pete's. Mm. Other people saying, I just watched on FXX and they do say Pier 1, but they cut out Lat Switch. Other people saying, no, they heard Trader Pete's on Pier 1. It's all over the place.
I just regret that for Marge Gets a Job, we didn't get the original line about Bart having Tourette's.
Oh, yeah,
it was changed to
true.
Rabies.
Yeah.
But it was still a Tourette's joke after he said rabies. So
that one's buried even more, the Tourette's thing. Like, yeah, I regret that now, too. I wasn't doing the clipping back then, so I'm going to blame Chris.
I think that's an original airing only thing, or maybe original airing and then, like, one rerun.
Yeah, well, I mean, we hit the same
We also had full-time jobs on top of that at the time.
Yeah. So give us a break.
Come on. No, that was me complaining. Damn it, Bob.
John Harrison says, I had a huge pang of counterculture shock listening to you guys talk about public bathhouses and saunas. I go to a sauna here in Korea about once a week, and they are fantastic stuff. Different style of hot rooms, cold rooms, hot tubs, high-pressure showers, and the Roman-style body scrubs, though I have never had the opposite-sex scrubbers. It's great stuff. It's also shocking to hear that it costs $25 an hour just for a hot tub in San Francisco. Like, one, you should not be shocked something in San Francisco is expensive.
Yeah, hearing that, I was like, oh, that sounds reasonable. Actually, my hairdresser is Japanese, and I was talking about possibly going to Japan this year, and I was like, oh, I love ramen, and I just found a new cheap place in the Berkeley, and it's great. And she's like, oh, how much is cheap ramen? And I was like, oh, you know, a meal's probably like $18. And she started laughing.
Yes,
and I was like, how much is good ramen in Japan? She's like, I don't know, $8.
Pretty much that is what I just paid.
Yeah.
Like, I was just in Tokyo, and these were big city Tokyo prices. Like, I got ramen and a drink for $10.
Wow.
Like,
We go to Ipudo in Berkeley, which is a great place. I think is affordable, but again, it's just like, oh, $16 for ramen, that's fine. But yeah. I'm used to living in this expensive place.
We've paid like $25 for ramen in the city.
Oh, for sure.
And a good, but not great, ramen place.
Yeah.
But I just love ramen.
It's so good.
I also think people in the U.S. are afraid of bathhouses out of gay panic, really. They're just like, that's where guys fuck each other, right? And it's like, well, you could get clean. But maybe it's also this idea of like, you have to be poor if you have to go somewhere for a bath. You should have a bath in your own house.
I think now that the stigma of being gay is less than it used to be, you no longer have to have sex like privately or like in a like closet or something, basically. I mean, if that's what you're into, that's what you're into. But I think there was a necessity to be like, we have to have sex somewhere in private because we can't be open about a relationship.
We'll be attacked if we do this somewhere else. Like, so better just have anonymous sex in a bathroom somewhere.
Is that an endorsement?
No, sure.
Okay. So,
straight or gay, just do it.
Joseph Story says, so I liked the saxophone joke as a kid, thinking it was funny that Homer was so dumb that he really thought he was playing the sax. After seeing that bit for years when the phone rang in my house, I would say telemophone the same way Homer did.
That's cute. I think we crapped on it just a little bit because I dislike when Homer is so stupid he thinks saxophone is saxophone. But I mean, some people are that stupid. They never learn how to like pronounce something that they don't understand. So we got some notes on Live with Dana Gould. Turd Sampson says, this was a fantastic episode/panel. A great interview and some really funny discussion. I literally burst out loud laughing when no one in the audience voted for Barney after I thought Chris did a really good job providing very convincing evidence. I'll throw another name into consideration for most pathetic man in Springfield, Kirk Van Houten. There are too many reasons to list, but just a few. He sleeps in a race car bed, he works/worked at a mid-tier cracker factory, and his son is the dud. I think I heard from many people Kirk Van Houten was our big missing piece in that one.
We didn't get to him yet, and I think like he is not really a loser until the episode, his first real episode.
Yeah.
Milhouse Divided. He's not named until that episode, actually. We don't know his name is Kirk. It was a cut scene from the Halloween episode from season 7 where we learn his name, but that was cut. So in season 8, we learn his name is Kirk.
Yeah, in our experience, we haven't seen Kirk Van Houten be too big of a loser yet. He absolutely is.
Yeah.
And he could replace any of those three in the argument of most pathetic guy. But within the spectrum we were looking at that day, Kirk,
that moment with Chris, though, we didn't plan that, and it was great. I was hoping a similar thing would happen at the second show.
Sadly, no.
It was a good comedic moment.
I know. It's one of those things you can't plan, and that's why it's even funnier.
So Talbert Johnson says, I'd say between the three, I was won over by Chris's endorsement of Barney, but my pick for Springfield's most pathetic man would have to be Hans Moleman. He's the show's go-to whenever it needs a character to be exploded, set on fire, have his brains drilled into by a doped-up Burns, or absorbed into a bouncing prisoner orb. Like Barney, he apparently can't hold down a job, whether it's prison librarian, morning radio host, or Edgar Allan Poe's birthplace mover. This is probably because he's a magnet for life-threatening violence. Hans was romantically spurned by, of all people, Selma, and unlike Barney, he has no innate skills and no Mo in his life. And his entire existence as a recurring character is one of Sisyphean torment and loneliness. No one is gay for Mole Man. It's true.
Man, yeah, those are all true statements about how good Mole Man to you. Man, the way he says, my brains in Team Homer.
That's great.
I love that line so much.
I don't know if I said it on the podcast or maybe during the rehearsal where it's just like, well, technically every man in Springfield is pathetic because you can't write jokes about a very competent person. Mm-hmm. It's much harder. So even Flanders is pathetic. Even like successful people are pathetic on The Simpsons.
Yeah, I would say Mole Man, he just has no dignity. Like, it's only funny if he's got dignity.
Yeah.
But he doesn't have any dignity. He doesn't also want to have dignity. He just exists and falls down and gets laughed at. It's more fun with dudes like Moe or Skinner who are like, Skinner wants dignity so bad. He's like, I'm the principal. Everyone should respect me. And lastly, Nina Matsumoto, our friend of the show, brings up a very important thing. Yeah. I was with Chris until he insisted he's right about the diarrhea thing, which is, again,
it's come up over and over again. I am a diarrhea gate truther about this.
Chris will not let go of this diarrhea thing. Like,
it's
it is.
Sorry, please.
So if I'm you stammering. Watch, if you don't know this, if you've watched Simpsons Roasting on an Open Fire, the first episode, there is the end where Barney drives off while Homer is looking for money and says, let's roll, Daria, the name of the woman who is in the car with him. Like, it is, he says Daria.
And Daria is a real name.
There's no reason to say diarrhea. He would not say it. It would not be it's not a joke.
I think 9-year-old Chris did not know the name Daria, as I didn't when I saw this episode, and just assumed, like, her name is diarrhea because that's a word I do know, and it's stuck in his brain.
Yeah.
And every time we have to say, no, Chris, it's Daria.
Like, but if you hear that clip and want to hear diarrhea, then Barney is garbled enough that you could hear that. But I'm not with it, man. It's Daria.
That is the Paul is dead of our program. It's technically there, but it's really not. So Bart sells his soul is up next, and Shy Ranger says, at the risk of memeizing with Simpsons Predicted It, whenever I think of nobodies from Kingdom Hearts 2, oh boy, I always compare them to when Bart says, I know that's funny, but I'm not laughing while watching TV. The whole idea that Bart can identify with and acknowledge what emotion to feel but can't feel it, that's the nobodies. I would love to hear, it turns out we just love this episode of The Simpsons and made Kingdom Hearts from it. That would be great.
I just wanted to include a Kingdom Hearts theory in here just to really push away people. Like,
fine. It's fine. I play Kingdom Hearts 2, and you know, like, every Kingdom Hearts game is about puberty and, like, growing up. And I think the nobodies is just, like, teenage depression and teenage angst. It's kind of, like, a very simple metaphor for, like, feeling, like, angsty, for lack of a better word.
I think it's pretty clear. But also, like, Kingdom Hearts makes no sense. Like,
yeah.
It also, it's trying to tell 8 stories at once that I think no one is interested in telling. But, I mean, hey, Weeb Simpsons or anybody else out there want to use that as a takeoff for a joke, I totally endorse it.
Like I said, it's very much about puberty. I replayed it recently, like 10 years ago recently, as an older person, and I was like, oh man, it's these 3 preteens together on an island, and the main one's like, I've got to give her my special fruit. And he's fighting another man to do it, boy. Just like, oh, what are you trying to say here?
If only I could. She won't listen. Well, and there's another bit. I was introduced to that theory too by a friend of mine, AJ. She wrote an entire article explaining Kingdom Hearts very well, but still made no sense to me. But she, when I was with her replaying the opening to 2, where after the whole Roxas bullshit, we're really pushing people away. But after all the Roxas,
it's got a bad opening. I'm sorry.
Then Sora wakes up again, but he's in his old clothes that don't fit anymore. And she's like, "Yeah, duh, this is puberty.
Yes,
he's growing up. This is the point here."
I'm glad AJ is corroborating with me on this idea. I mean, I think it's extremely obvious now. But
yeah, it's. I mean, it annoys me sometimes to have to explain symbolism on stuff when it's so obvious. It's like, come on, guys. Darren Hinchy says, it might just be me, but I always saw Milhouse's mean attitude towards Bart asking for his soul back was to show that Bart's soul was affecting the personality of Milhouse. He was becoming more like Bart the same way Bart was losing something of himself. I like that. I like that theory.
I like that idea.
Yeah, I don't think it's true. I think Milhouse was just, he was happy to have control in his relationship with Bart for the first time in his life.
I think that was the intent, but I like this reading of it a lot. Yeah. It's very cool.
It's definitely the metaphysical reading of everything in there. I mean, I'm of the belief, too, that, like, doors don't sense your soul. It's just that it was broken that one day and Bart smashed his face into it. Mm-hmm. Though on the condensation thing, that's harder to explain away. On his way to breathe, no breath.
Well, God is real and was punishing him.
That's true.
In the Simpsons world.
And the Bible.
I'll read the next two since they're both pretty brief. So Fresher Than says, to be honest, we fucking love Chili's. And Kiefer Folsom replied, same here, and I worked there for a year and a half too. You think that would turn me off, but nope, love it. I think I've only had Chili's once.
We had a lot of people defending chain restaurants, Chili's among them.
We're Bay Area elitists.
Yeah, we are. I mean, it's pretty rare. I only eat at chain restaurants when I go outside of the Bay Area, really. I rarely will go up half a mile to a different restaurant because outside of my apartment, there are seriously seven great restaurants I could just cycle through whenever I feel like eating out.
Berkeley's great. Please come here.
Elliot Long says, this is one of my favorite episodes, and I believe Kat is right about the treaty ending the war in the Pacific was signed on the USS Missouri. My grandfather was a bomber mechanic stationed in the Pacific. Not only did he witness the signing of the treaty, he also saw the Enola Gay fly on its way to drop the first bomb on Japan.
Isn't that the plane Krusty crashed in later this season?
Yes, it is. A sweet Enola Gay.
It's actually the I'm on a Rolla Gay.
Oh, I'm on a Rolla Gay. That's right.
They really groaned about that joke on the commentary.
Yeah. Boy, I was getting that confused with sweet Enola Gay, son.
Oh, that's right. Colonel Happablap. Colonel, he's coming up. We're going to record that one next.
We're getting real close to Hap Happablap. It's true.
Tear you up like a tissue at a snot party. So Alex Irish says, if Yins, Pittsburgh, are into cooking, there's Eats Like a Duck, a cookery blog dedicated to The Simpsons, and they do have Uncle Moe's recipes from this episode. Might I suggest the hobo chicken chili with secret hobo spices? It's the next recipe I'm going to make myself.
I should check that out. I'm not much of the cooking type, but
I want to see if they have veggie recipes. I'll do it.
Yeah.
I'm not going to eat any chicken next.
So then we had a couple of cool comments on our second live show from Piano Fight. Ellie Long says, I really hope you guys can do more shows in the future. I had a lot of fun at this. Plus, I like having an excuse to get out of Portland for the weekend. So, man, this guy came to us from Portland.
I've hung out with Elliot. He's great. We saw the eclipse together, eclipse. Yeah, he drove us all the way out to the middle of nowhere.
I met him. He was cool.
Yeah, Elliot's great.
I went to a wrestling show with him as well. He was a cool dude.
We went out for awesome Chinese noodles, too. Elliot's cool.
And he wore the Talking Simpsons shirts there, which proved not only did he buy it, but he's a fan. So he gave us so much money.
He's a super fan. So Lady of Old Boots says, hearing the phrase 12-ounce mouse sent me into a dissociative fugue. I swear that I know I saw every episode of that show, but I can't for the life of me even picture it. What the fuck? Yes, I think Chris brought that up, and I did watch a lot of it, and I think that was where Adult Swim was like, listen, guys, your show has to be about something.
It has to be something.
Yeah, it was just like pure Dadaism, which was like, the joke was sort of like, it was almost like a PFFR show, where it was like, can you believe they let us do this and that you were wasting your time with this? But at least like the Harchie Haulers and Delocated and Wonder Shows, and they had like characters and stories and things
sketches,
like that. Yeah.
Acting, those things. And they also, the production wasn't bad on a like production value level. Meanwhile, 12-ounce mouse was like, we drew this in 1 second, and you're fucking looking at it. This is nothing.
I think it's like a show for when you're coming down or something. I don't know. Yes. It's like you must be on drugs.
It's
for
a
this.
Drug show.
Oh, for sure.
For sure, yes. Then on Lisa the Vegetarian, we got some really good comments. I honestly, almost too many to pick from. But Chris Dobson says, yay, I'm on year 5 of being veggie, actually pesca. And just had Bob's experience last week at a diner in Texas where an old lady won. Told me she couldn't replace carne enchilada sauce with verde. 2, asked me if I ate no meat after I switched my order to some fish. And 3, as she rang me up 15 minutes later, shook her head and said quietly, no beef, no chicken, nothing?
Some people cannot imagine that.
It's just unbelievable.
Yeah, just fish.
Just fish.
So speaking of fish, Dagan Fish says, as someone who works at a high school in Southwest Missouri, dissection is still going strong. The things they dissect are sharks, cats, frogs, and fetal pigs. As a cat lover, it always breaks my heart throwing away the disassembled cat corpses. Frowny face. Ooh, I got a frowny face too over that. I always thank them for their sacrifice for science.
The cats is kind of the craziest one. I was like,
it's too close to home.
Yeah, that, I mean, you know, they're all living things and they're all being cut apart. So you maybe should, it would be the egalitarian thing to feel the same for all of them. But cats are nice and friendly, and yeah, we take care of cats.
I have not interacted with, let's say, sharks as much.
No, or fetal pigs. Yeah, exactly. I'm like, eh, you're gross. But like cats, that's, oh, man. And I feel like that's one of those things, I said it on the episode, but I feel like they only keep doing dissection for the same reason, like there's assholes who say, oh, we have to have dodgeball. We'll make kids into wusses if we don't have dodgeball.
They got rid of corporal punishment. Look what happened.
And then the Jesus, they lost both of them. John Zerniak, apologies if I said that. I think the boot in Lisa's thought bubble about hot dogs is the same boot on the Australian flag. To disagree with me is a bootable offense.
I will agree with you. I don't have a picture of the boot, but I'm sure if they needed a boot design, it was there somewhere in an envelope they could just pull out.
I still, can you believe I still would eat a hot dog after that joke? That is very true.
It is. I want a veggie dog, though. It's been a while. Let's go get a...
Let's go to the Libertarian hot dog place. Yeah. They only employed one Nazi there.
Just one?
That actually, like, for real, came out, guy. Listen. After the Nazi rally in North Carolina where someone was fucking murdered at it, every person who could be identified from that, from being part of the Nazis, got publicly shamed, as they should have been. And one of them was a dude who worked at that fucking hot dog shop. I was like, great. Mm-hmm. I'm glad I gave that place money.
How much of a background check did he get?
I mean, they probably said, well, I don't agree with you, but I support your right to say it. You're hired.
I will tolerate the wall devoted to Ayn Rand maybe once every 2 years for a good veggie dog. Their veggie dogs are fine.
They are fair.
And cheap. So Ayarate says, and apologies if I destroyed your name, great episode as always. Only thing I can think of that comes kind of close to sparking the same sort of angry reaction in people as vegetarianism is people who choose not to drink. Everyone who drinks assumes alcohol consumption is just part of the human experience and use it as a bonding ritual. Some people probably feel a little guilty about it too. So when they find out someone else doesn't drink, it's that same sort of, oh, so you think you're better than me kind of shit? I totally agree with you. I am a drinker. I think it's because I grew up in a very culturally like working class place. So everyone around me was drinking, adults are drinking. I drink to relax. I don't think I drink too much. And of course, I can trust my own opinion on that.
Yes.
But I totally understand if people don't want to drink. And I want to say, I don't think I've ever given anyone shit about it.
No,
that's a really shitty thing to do.
No, I mean, I am somebody who, I have gotten drunk and I don't not drink. But also, I can go weeks with not a drop of alcohol and not miss it. And it is that I am a very cheap person. And
I like beer too much. I like beer too much.
Well, I will spend money on like sugary candy things. I will do that. But when I have to spend $7 like on a beer when I don't like the taste of beer, I'm like, you're robbing me. This is, and so I don't miss it. But then when I go to bars, if other people are drinking, I know I'm making some people uncomfortable by, they're like, you're not really going to drink anything? Really?
I think it is worse than the whole vegetarianism thing, because like, what if somebody is a recovering alcoholic or something like that, where it's just like, this is not a conversation they want to have with you, you know, like, oh, I did horrible things, or I'm putting my life back together, or I just, that's over now, I don't do that anymore.
Or also, yeah, I don't drink. My father was a horrible alcoholic, and I would never touch that alcohol.
Another good reason.
Yeah, and maybe they don't want to explain it, you know? Andrew Giacchetti says, also wanted to point out that I believe is an homage to this episode in another cartoon. Haha, Simpsons did it and the like. I'm sure lots of people around here watch regular show and know that J.G. Quintel is a big Simpsons fan. He puts the ask this science-tician joke in like 5 different episodes throughout the series. Mm-hmm. You can see a lot of Simpsons influences on that show in both writing and the art. And also, I mean, they employed Bill Oakley several episodes as well. I think Weinstein as well.
I somehow missed this entire show along with a lot of other Cartoon Network shows, but I recently watched the first episode. I'm like, oh, this is great. I want to watch it all now. Like, I didn't know it was that good.
I love that show. It does take me back to my 20s now as well, because it is about being like
my late 20s.
Yeah, a sad sack loser who should be doing something with their life. Instead, they're just like living in a perpetual childhood with other people, but also just the randomness of it. And then as they would create a story to it as well. And also it follows like Adventure Time. It starts feeling episodic and they're like, no, these are going somewhere. Mm. Like they happen in a, and also like,
There's a movie too, like a made for TV movie.
Yeah, yeah. And it ended with true finality. It had a real, real ass last episode. And also I loved about it that they, like Adventure Time, they cast tons of comedians and improv actors that I love in just a random ass role. Like Jason Mantzoukas was on it. Janie Haddad Tompkins was a major character on the show. I got to interview her once.
Oh, she's great. That.
And she was so nice and great. And I made sure to never mention her husband. I was like, you're your own person.
Look, it's Paul Tompkins' wife.
Yeah. I should get a gold star for not treating her, defining her by her husband.
The one thing I know about regular show is that the pilot or the original short it's based on is very adult in that it was, I think, two people working at a convenience store. They take acid and they think they are a giant bird and a person with a gumball machine head. And they have to like get through the rest of their shift while they're tripping really hard.
I forgot about that. Yeah. I mean, it's
funny that that became a Cartoon Network show.
You watch the show. It's very druggy. I mean, it's the altered state of drugsachusetts for the millennial generation.
That's true. It's me next, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, so Matt Bixler, hello, says Bob's comment about not telling people he's pescatarian because that extends the conversation is exactly how I feel about telling people I'm pansexual. I usually just give some sort of hand-wavy I'm bi statement and pray that the conversation just moves the hell on from that point. Mm-hmm. Very good. I mean, it's none of their fucking business.
Yeah, it's none of their business who you want to be with. And then if you want to get into it, it's like I'm bi, and then it's like this is not... I had heard this great thing. I am gay, listeners, in case you don't know, and didn't forget that from me saying I have a husband.
You have to announce it at the beginning of every episode.
but I remember this other cool gay person once saying about this kind of thing of like, it's not your job to be the newsletter. Like, you can be. You can inform and educate someone, but it's not your fucking job to do that. And especially like if you say pansexual, that opens up people to be like, well, how's that different from bi?
Yeah.
And then you have to also discuss like what gender is and how gender is not science and blah. And then you're opening yourself up to 8 million fights at that point.
Yeah. You don't owe anyone an explanation or a debate about anything. That's my theory.
But you know, what is heavily up to debate is one joke that I had no fucking clue was up to debate. Oh, multiple people brought this up, but I'm going with Talbert Johnson's comment, which is, that Ralph Viking line is, in my experience, the most interpretationally divisive joke in the show. I've always taken it to mean I'm great at sleep, but I've heard plenty of people hear it as I dream I'm a Viking, which I think is equally funny as a non sequitur Ralphism. So I never heard it as, oh boy, sleep, I'm great at that. That's where I'm a Viking. Like that he's... That I took it as just Ralph is proud that when he sleeps, he is a Viking. Like that's,
yeah.
And it implies that all his dreams, he is a Viking, not anything different.
It is sort of like a monkey cheese random Ralph line. But also, I think it's a mix of the two intentions. I think, yes, Ralph is dreaming about being a Viking, but he's told to go to sleep after he fucks up. He's just like, in my sleep, I'm a powerful warrior.
Yes.
And that's a cool thing for me to experience because I just ate like my worm and I'm a loser. So it could be both. It's like, I'm a powerful Viking and that's great. So I'm going to excel at sleeping.
Mm-hmm. And he's not sad about it either. He doesn't realize he is being punished by the teacher. And he doesn't even think about like, I just got an F. Like, but some people take it as like, I'm a Viking. It's just one thing he dreams of, or it's this aspirational thing. I had no clue this was divisive. Unlike the obviously divisive, have you ever seen a man yell at his shoes before?
Yes. And then that was confirmed on Twitter.
But I mean, who's to say what Castellaneta meant when he said the line?
He said yes once. That's why it's funny. That's why it's funny. Come on. All right. So I think it's me.
Yes.
Treehouse 4-6 comments. So Sila Chesnikov says, I always thought the scene in Homer Cube where Bart ties a rope around himself to go into the other dimension was straight out of the first Poltergeist, where they did the same thing to save Carol Ann. Reverend Lovejoy even does the Zelda Rubinstein's go into the light bit. Yes, you're totally right.
We missed that reference.
Yeah, I have not seen Poltergeist, and I need to go see that movie again.
A long time, yeah. The last time I saw it was after reading this very smart essay about how it's actually about punishing hippies. And it's like, now hippies have children and they're too lax and they lose their children and they need to refind religion to get them back.
You're right.
Because it starts with the parents getting high. Like they get high, their mom and dad get high while their kids are sleeping?
I saw someone pointing that out on Twitter. It's a movie where the like people can casually smoke weed, but it's not a movie about drugs or like addiction or anything else. I mean, it's like a metaphor for like hippies or whatever.
That was them showing their moral rot that caused them to get the poltergeisting.
You need a very small small exorcist to solve those problems.
So D Fight, friend of the show and our buddy in Japan, says, "This is an information-packed episode, so I thought you might like to know that Bob's Big Boy exists in Japan, minus the Bobs. They cut out Bob.
I feel hurt.
The restaurant and mascot are here, but they're just called Big Boy, and links to bigboyjapan.co.jp. It's a standard family restaurant in Japan, which means lots of burgers served on plate without buns that you can eat with a knife and fork, aka hamburger steak, as they call them. I had that a couple times, and with curry on it, which I fucking love Japanese curry, love it. But it really is just like, here is a round hamburger, eat it like a steak, which as somebody who just eats steak or just regular beef, it was a different experience.
Is that like Salisbury steak? Just like hamburger?
Yeah, pretty much.
It's a way to dress up a very cheap meal. Mm-hmm. But I thought I gave a very thorough history of Big Boy on the podcast, but they got rid of Bob's a long time ago. It was bought out by like Conglomco Foods or whatever.
It hasn't been Bob for a while, eh?
They kicked Bob out a long time ago. Old man Bob. So Darren Hinchy says, pretty sure Chris was thinking of Burt Bacharach in Austin Powers and not Polanka. And yes, you are right. Chris is being punished right now. He's in reference jail.
I'm mad at myself for not correcting him there, but I could not remember. I was like, I do remember somebody singing a song, but even Austin Powers, the character just says out loud, like, Mr. Burt Bacharach.
Right. And he's singing What the World Needs Now?
Yes. I think, in the first one. Not a Polanka song.
No.
David Molnar says, it's the math time.
Let's not read any of the equations.
Okay. The equation. Sorry, Dave Molnar. This is not a judgment on you. I don't like math.
It's going to be hard. You're going to fall asleep for like 3.987 to the factor of 12, of course.
So the equation that Mike Reese calls David Cohen out was based on Fermat's last theorem. The theory states that the Pythagorean theorem equation A squared plus B squared equals C squared is limited to only when the power is either 1 or 2. Any positive number multiplied by powers greater than 2 will never fit into the Pythagorean theorem. The equation that David Cohen inserted is, I'm not going to read it, which looks accurate up to the 10th digit and thus making it appear correct on a standard issue calculator. But when you are able to view the 11th and beyond digits, you can see that the equation is not correct and the answer is not a perfect whole number.
You need six figures of student loan debt to understand that joke and find out why it's funny. I appreciate it though, but that is a PhD in computer science or math or whatever joke that's like I guess it's funny after you explained it.
But at least in that episode they also have jokes about not showering too, so they have that joke followed directly by I know where the shower.
That's probably the smartest joke on TV at that point, up to that point in time, like
in a pre-Futurama world. I'll also say, you know, watching Futurama is really getting me back into the late 90s mindset that is the same as Fight Club, which feels 8 billion years ago now. Just like, oh, I have all this ennui that I have to like have a job and it's not exactly what I wanted to do. It's like, boy, that feels like 5 recessions ago.
Cursed to have a job.
Oh, this job. I have all this money, but no happiness. Like, boy, I have not money. Sounds
I have
nice.
A nice apartment.
Do I really love my wife? Like, fuck you.
There are so many like post-war books and 90s books about that same thing. Just like, is this really the American dream?
Yes.
Yeah, whatever. Who cares? Eli Hernandez says, this has got to be my favorite Treehouse of Horror. The first time I saw this episode, I remember the part where Ken Brockman warns the television viewers about the next commercial you see could attack you. The next commercial that came out was a Doritos commercial, which I was just snacking on while watching this episode. My anxiety made me put the Doritos back in the pantry, fearing I'd choke on one, laughing out loud online. Yes, I was too old to actually think the commercials could kill me, but if I was impressionable, I would be like, uh-oh.
If it was the exact thing I had in my hand.
There is no Doritos mascot.
Yeah.
I mean, it was Cheetos, maybe. Yeah. Who was
he
the Doritos
Jay
mascot?
Leno.
Oh, God.
Well, he wasn't the mascot. He was a spokesman. Not exactly the same. Yeah, they should have got their own Chester Cheeto or whatever, but Doritos is just, it's Doritos. You eat it with Mountain Dew as you are assigned to do as a man from age 18 to 45.
The mascot for Doritos and Mountain Dew is video games.
Yes, yeah. It's the Doritos Pope.
That's right.
Good times. They have more video game references for non-gamer listeners. So, you know, I shouldn't be making fun of Chris for messing up Burt Bacharach because I'm taking some football flack on this one. Robert Flaxman says, Ronald Reagan did not play Newt Rockne, but rather one of Rockne's players, George Gipp, in the 1940 film Newt Rockne All-American. Hence, Reagan's later nickname of the Gipper, as in the film he tells Rockne to tell his players to win one for the Gipper, i.e. himself.
As a kid who was alive when Reagan was president, I can't believe people expected me to know what that reference was. I heard it all the time. Like, who the fuck is the Gipper?
The Gipper said this. Like, yeah. If you were 30 in the 80s, you weren't alive when that movie came out. Like,
it's not a well-remembered movie.
Yeah.
I've never seen it replayed anywhere at our theaters over here. I've never seen, like, a DVD of it. I'm sure it was fairly popular.
The only reason you'd remember in the 80s is because it's your president.
So yeah.
Bedtime for Bonzo. And that, you know, everybody... This is get back into politics real quick, but I do want to say that, like, everybody wants to treat our horrible current president, who is awful, Donald Trump, as like, oh, this has never happened before. This is crazy. It's like, we had an actor president whose job was being an actor who started movies. Like, he wasn't a politician, and he was also losing his mind and an old man. So to act like this guy is unprecedented currently, that's like, No.
If they remade Back to the Future, and they shouldn't, and they won't, and I hope they don't, if they remade it like as Marty McFly exists today and has to go back to 1988, you can make the same Reagan joke, like, you know, President Donald Trump, you mean the rich guy? You mean the rich
guy who just bought the USFL? No. Why don't you try to sell me on George Michael being dead or gay? Yeah. What are you next going to tell me? Is George Michael gay? These jokes are so easy to write.
Yeah.
It's why everybody does a time travel show and easily writes jokes like fucking Family Guy, man.
I think Paul F. Tompkins has a bit about how much he hates those jokes.
Yeah, I know. He loves it. That goes right up there with his... I just recently bought a Smashed Penny, and I listened to his Smashed Penny.
Oh, great.
Look up Paul F. Tompkins' Smashed Penny. It's one of the greatest bits I've ever heard.
I love his comedy. So Gabby Serato says, I used to think Tron was a made-up thing or an inside joke among the writers that the audience wasn't meant to get until a couple of episodes later before Tron Legacy was released. This didn't stop it from being one of the most common Simpsons things I can talk about with any other person my age that everyone will get.
Mm-hmm. I, like we said on the thing, I blame Disney for not making any nostalgia for Tron before the second Tron movie came out. Like, no one did remember Tron then. You wouldn't see it, and they never talked about it. And though in our friend group, if you ever ask if somebody has seen a thing you've seen, and two people haven't seen it, then you all have to go like, nope, nope.
Basically, it's just any question. It's like, you guys hungry? Nope, nope, nope.
No,
yes,
no.
I mean, no. I mean, that's any kind of question that's formed with a group of us, that will be the response. And then we'll give our real response. We're sick.
Yeah,
we're all sick.
We have problems. All right, and the last comment we're going to read is Alex Forsythe saying, there's also a Statue of Liberty play in TMNT2, The Secret of the Ooze. After they get the pizza in the opening, Michelangelo yells, Donnie, Statue of Liberty. Also, you missed the joke where Krusty said, now the clock is still running, so it's important we get this playoff as soon as possible. If the clock is still running, the game was over before Krusty even started talking.
That is a great joke. It's a very, very, like, a lot of fast lines from Krusty. Like, he just dropped into that scene, like, there was a ton of jokes and leaves.
It's so funny, but also it hurts. It can distract from the gag because you're watching in the background a giant spider appear out of Sinky Sand. So you aren't even thinking about what Krusty is saying. But it is so great that in Bart's dream of winning the Super Bowl that they're going to try a forward pass for the first time ever, but also the clock is ticking as they're talking about it in the last play.
That's
of the
why
game.
He's talking so fast. So yeah, that was Talk to the Audience, folks. Woo! Thank you so much for listening. Again, look forward to Futurama and What a Cartoon. Anything else, Henry?
No, other than, thanks to all the you new listeners. Look up all the old stuff that we did. There's tons of cool interviews there and lots more cool interviews to come in. And I guess we're just going to go out on our What a Cartoon theme. You get to hear for the first time ever right now.
Yeah, this is the demo version, but it'll play us out. Take it easy.
Cartoons were present in the past, Every week will be an animated bash. Yeah. What a cartoon. What a cartoon. Maybe a short but mostly shows. We'll talk, we'll